So it's probably important to explain the dynamics between what a VC really is and how you as an entrepreneur might see us, but actually how we need to see ourselves. Because much like a company has shareholders, we have shareholders. They're called limited partners. These are individuals, high net worth individuals, pension funds, sovereign funds of different countries that decide in their portfolio allocation that they want to do private equity, and within private equity to do venture capital, and within venture capital to do early stage funds. And they allocate some money to that. Their expectation is that you're going to give them a return superior to other asset classes that might have been less risky over a specific time period. And most venture capital funds have a 10-year horizon. On the other side, you have the entrepreneurs who see us as a source of funding and a source of hopefully value add in helping them scale. And the reason I highlight this is because you need to think about the dichotomy of those shareholders and clients. Our client is the entrepreneur, and if we serve them properly and we support them properly, they will have hopefully an exit, which means we can serve our shareholders by giving them the return they want. But sometimes there's misalignment between the two. LPs have I have a finite fund. I have a 10-year fund. If I invest in a company in year four, that means I need to figure out a way for that company to give me money back to give to my shareholders by year six, by year 10. Except if you have Facebook where you can go back to your investors and say, hey, you know, they're doing well, they haven't gone public yet, can I have a couple more years? And hopefully most investors would have said yes. And Accel, which was one of the early backer of Facebook, did quite well, and so did their LPs. Secondly, when I look at my portfolio allocation and how I actually create the portfolio structure of what I invest in, I need to balance crazy risk, like Nick Dalosio, 15-year-old kid with two employees, with a more mature company, probably, you know, a SaaS business with 50 employees, 5 million, 10 million run rate. And I need to balance that out between timing, between when I'm investing, and then path to exit. And so the way we've tried to balance that out is by having also geographic dispersity, which allows us to de-risk by finding companies in New York or London or Berlin or Stockholm and trying to select the best ones. But very few people, I think, when they think about VCs, think about the fact that my job, the guy who can actually fire me, is a Canadian sovereign fund manager who's given me a lot of money to go find entrepreneurs like you. And the fact that I need to serve them by actually delivering on the results. And the results for me, what I'll be measured on, the way I make money, is by having an exit of significant size so that I can return enough to the fund, right? So just quick, simple economics on the way VC funds work. Most of them are on 2 and 20 model. Every year, I get 2% of the commitment to pay for my rent, my salary, the vast number of flights that I take every year, and the staff that we have. And then if I have an exit and I return the fund, everything above the fund itself, the profit, gets split 80% to the LPs, 20% to me. So I'm not in the money until I've returned the fund. So assume, make it simple, that you have a $100 million fund. You need to have had exits of $100 million. Your piece of the business has to have returned $100 million. And until you get to $101 million, you don't start making any money or any significant money from the exits. So we are strongly incentivized to actually focus on the exits, which sometimes, putting my entrepreneur hat back on, is a misalignment with what the entrepreneur wants to do, which is actually build that scale. Maybe the ramp-up path is a bit different from this kind of 10-year forced curve, which is where a number of new kind of funding models start coming into play. It's actually getting interesting. The last couple of years, with the emergence of Kickstarter and AngelList and LendingClub, has actually democratized the access to funding for entrepreneurs. I don't know if some people have seen this graph. It's funders and founders is the name of the website. It's a great illustration of the kind of the value chain of a startup and how different people come into play. You know? So you and your co-founder are sitting here and come up with a brilliant idea. You effectively own half of the company each. You go to mom and dad and convince mom and dad to give you a couple $1,000s to at least pay for the server costs on Amazon Web Services. You launch an app in the App Store, hooray, you're alive, you have a company. And at some point, you turn to angel investors to actually give you some more funding, be it the Oxford SBS Fund, be it the number of various angel groups that exist in London and here. They part ways with some of their money, and at that point, you start diluting yourself, you start giving out more equity. At some point, you reach scale, and you start talking to institutional investors, people like me. People have that relationship with LPs who have a focus on the exit a couple years down the road. Typical rule of thumb, when you are looking at a VC round, you're talking about somewhere between 20 and 30% dilution in that round. What does that mean? If you actually raised, let's keep it simple, $3 million at a $7 million pre-money valuation, that means your company is now worth $10 million and you gave away 30% of your company for those $3 million. So what happens as you sequence various funding cycles is if you're giving away, if you're giving away 20 to 30% in each round, you know, after Series D, the amount of ownership that the entrepreneur has is getting reduced significantly. So should you actually hit an IPO, by that point you might be worth hopefully $500 million and you only have 10% of the company, but it's 10% of $500 million. And I highlight this because a lot of people get very, very, very focused on dilution and how much of the company you own. And I think dilution is critically important because that means that it's the value to you of the business and how much you own. But don't equate it with control. There's different ways in which you can maintain control of your company, different class voting shares, such as Facebook and Google have, agreements on veto rights. Focus more on the value of that money in terms of scaling up the business. And focus more on whether that money is going to go take your valuation from $10 million to $100 million because it gives you the cash to effectively put fuel on the rocket ship and take off. So if you end up exiting an IPO and you only have 10% of a $500 million company, hopefully that's still a good exit as an individual. But this graph actually, I always share it with my friends who are doing angel investing because it also shows to them, the angels, that unless they have enough cash, they're going to get diluted down the path too. So before creating White Star the fund, White Star was actually an angel vehicle for my partner and I. And our biggest issue is that at some point you run out of money, or you should, that you're putting in this risky asset class. Secondly, that you can't follow on each investment round. So effectively, if I invested in Uber as an angel and I put in $50,000, at the next round, to keep my percentage ownership, I would have had to put in $500,000. And then for this last crazy $22 billion valuation, I would have had to put in several million dollars. So either as an angel, you get diluted, or worst case scenario, the company crashes and you lose everything. So angel investing is definitely risky in the sense of, I would call it gambling, right? I think a U.S. Business school professor analyzed angel investing and said that unless you can have the capacity to do over 40 deals in your portfolio, it's unlikely you will return 2x on your angel investing. So that's a lot of risk for only 2x. A bunch of other asset classes that can probably give you that in the same time frame. And I mentioned that for people in the room who might also be considering angel investing as an interesting path. It's fun because you get to work with entrepreneurs, but it's definitely Vegas money.